Magnificent work coming from the 1688 Orchestra, Culture, and on, I was going to say the line, but zooming in as we examine more Bajan rhythm and rhyme. We have the man himself, Sluggy Dan. Welcome, Sluggy, to VOB 92.9 FM.
manners, I respect. It's me. Welcome all. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. And maximum respect for Barbados for supporting the show, you know, making VOB number one. Really appreciate you guys for that. And I have to say, before I start, thanks to all those who through VOB have been supporting the venture I'm doing. And I'm part of this big worldwide thing where they're saluting Caribbean heroes, and I was the person this there select to represent Barbados as one of the Caribbean heroes from Barbados. And you have to thank One Yard Concerts. I have to thank them for that. Really appreciate you guys choosing me among the Barbadians to be one of the Caribbean heroes. And I have to say thanks to VOB for that, because you're all who allowed me to showcase what I do. So you have to say thanks to David Ellis and my boy Ronnie and everybody at VOB for that. But that's a really, really big thing to me. Coming from where I come from, I never envisioned these things happening. So maximum respect. And thanks to bar cutters and pawnbrokers, because every Wednesday night, I have a home now. Listen to this, Barbados. Every Wednesday night, I have a home where I'm going to be featuring Barbadian talent. I have lots of young people coming, lots of wonderful young talent coming, and it's every Wednesday night at Bar Cutters in Beckles Road. Can't miss us, we're from the main road. Every Wednesday night, I'm going to be featuring young talent. If any of the old ones come to want to sing, I'm not turning back either, but I have tons of young talent coming through. And the proceeds is just a $10 donation to come in, and the proceeds goes to Bajans in need. Proceeds from this night goes to Bajans in need. So this is every Wednesday night at Bar Cutters. Come out and vibe me. I'm going to be singing some songs as well. I'm going to get everybody to pass through and get Ronnie to come through and sing some of his hits as well. Alvin Topping came last week and performed a poem. This is DJ Alvin Topping. Soca Superman came through last week and performed a poem for us, an original poem that he wrote. You have to come out every Wednesday night at Bar Cutters, Beckles Road, and help support Bajans in need, man. And Pawnbrokers International is going to be giving away a prize every Wednesday at my show as well. So every Wednesday, someone got to win something. This Wednesday, I have an Amazon tablet or a Fire Stick that I'm going to be giving away on Wednesday night. So big up Pawnbrokers for that. I'm using the internet right now. But maximum respect for Pawnbrokers for making sure that I stay connected so that I can call into VOB 92.9. I really appreciate everything that you guys do and supporting the venture Sluggy. And thanks to One Yard for selecting me as one of the Caribbean heroes, man. For real, heard. For real. Maximum respect. Heard Ronnie playing some sweet music earlier.
You still there, Kev?
Stefan is saying meeting hopefully let you in soon. Yes, I'm here. Stefan is saying that he's the same meeting was will let you in soon. So we pull up for Stefan.
Well, he's here now.
The VLA, then maybe
he is here now.
Our guest. Okay.
Dr. Stefan Walcott.
Well, right. Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, today we'll be having a conversation with Dr. Stefan Walcott, and extremely pleased. I had the privilege of being a student at Barbados Community College when I was going to school for music. I had the privilege of doing more than one class with Stefan, quite a few actually. And I was also privileged to be a part of his ensemble and had a chance to see two separate Caribbean islands touring as a musician while studying in school. And I think, and just listen to this, people of Barbados, and I think that is such an important thing for us, that cultural exchange. Like, you can't put a price, Ronnie, nor you can put a certificate on it, Ronnie. Like, being able to go and absorb a different culture and share yours, and then you take in theirs at a young age, and then has quite a few of it in our class. I was very young, I was able to do that. That exchange, you learn so much on this short 4 or 5 days. You learn a lot from just traveling and that was true, Dr. Stephan Walker as well. So it must say thank you to him for allowing me to be able to acquire that and the learning process. And a lot of what we do know how we see Barbadian music, how we see Barbadian art, and the reason why you see Barbadian art is different because he opened up the ears to hearing our music a different way. And before he came on, he would have heard Ronnie playing some music from 1680. I believe it was Ronnie, and I believe that was Kelly Cadogan. Kelly Cadogan, I believe Ronnie was playing from 1688, and that is entirely Bajan, but it's very, very different. So he opened up my appetite. So it's certainly a pleasure to have this young gentleman on the show today, and I want to say, Dr. Stephan Walker, welcome to Bajan Rhythm and Rhyme, my brother.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introductions. Like, you can hear me everything, loud and clear.
Yes, please. Yes, sweet. We sweet. Once Ronnie say enough, it'll be good.
I have no issue with Dr. Walcott being on. Not to age myself, because I'm still a young old man. His father taught me at Combermere School. A great man, a man well respected and loved by my peers at school.
Yes.
And I'm not surprised to see he has a brilliant, gifted, talented son. And Dr. Stephan has the coolness and the
yes,
safe, secure, insightful manner that his dad has as a teacher. And it's a joy for me to see him do what he's doing. And I've had the privilege in another arena as a Calypsonian of benefiting from his presence in the festival, yes, band, because people need to appreciate the quality of work that he and his peers at that level produce at a world-class standard every year, especially when they're working with persons who are not quite at the level of people like Dr. Carter,
yes,
and Ambassador Wiltshire. And they give you that insight, yes, you know. It's amazing. It's amazing watching them work and hearing what they produce. And the 1688 Orchestra, I played Culture, but the Christmas work too, we'll be hearing a lot more of that very shortly.
Oh, yes, yes. I hear the Christmas work on 104.
And the fact that he's an Arsenal fan does not diminish his ability in any way whatsoever.
I hear you. Big show to my dad, he's been a big influence as well too, man. I took a lot of stuff, whether you like it or not, you absorb a lot of stuff from that parental environment. So yeah, he was a math teacher for years at Commonwealth, man. Years. And he did that. So he never told us anything about what happened at school. We got home, did what we had to do. We never really knew that side of him, but thanks for giving me the show talk, man.
Yeah, man.
Yes, indeed. So, Steph, how you said, like he's part of the reason why you are a teacher now, although the different capacity is not the school system, but he's part of the reason why you are a teacher now?
I'm not really. I kind of fell into teaching, as I guess some people do. It wasn't like what I intended to set up after seeing him or whatever. I said I wanted to be a teacher. It's just that when I came back from studying in England around 2004, I called Roger, and Roger said if I would come and teach Caribbean music and the big band. So, you know, at that time, Slaggy, you got a hustle, boy. Very young, you ain't got no options. So,
yes, then that's
correct. So I'd say, yeah, for sure, Raj. So then from then, I was involved in teaching at BCC. So it kind of fell into it. It wasn't my intention. But seeing that, I knew that when it came back, I had to try and impart what little I knew or what I knew to my Barbadian people first. A lot of people were saying, man, stay in the UK. You going back to BIM 4, BIM dead, BIM got nothing, BIM... Him in there for you down there. But I was saying, listen, if while you're young and energetic and enthusiastic, and when he was organizing all those trips with Caribbean Ensemble, I got to get that young energy to my Bajan people first and my Caribbean people first, right? Because that's when he could do certain things. Right. So that's when he decided to do, come back home and finally teaching at the BCC that way.
Yeah, and so happened. Well, you know, I time and still no, I especially know as a musician, teaching was is more secure thing.
Yeah, it's fortunate, man.
Yeah.
I was actually going to cut back a little bit on teaching this year. But before I could make that decision, COVID said, hold on a second. not make that move yet. Because having a family now, Sluggy, you know, you got to look at other priorities. You got to take other things into consideration. Just don't be about your own movements and your own desires anymore. You got to bear all those things into consideration. Take all those things into consideration, sorry. So, still involved in teaching BCC again. Nelly Caribbean Music Intake, and Nelly Caribbean Ensemble Intake, because that's why I teach there, Randy Caribbean Ensemble, where we do a cross-section of Caribbean music. To the youth. Ronnie, a lot of these people never hear a lot of songs that you speak about all so eloquently because you have a depth of knowledge in the 80s and 90s in Barbados.
Listen, boy, that's incredible.
Correct. So Caribbean Ensemble, how we give these guys a chance, right, to come and come to this music. We did all kinds of music, like, man. Remember we did like Crossfire Medley, Square One Medley.
Yes. Yes.
Think, you know, people really know these songs, but not the case all the time, Ronnie.
Especially even the Wendy Allen's. When we do the Wendy Allen's, none of the boys
know the Wendy Allen's. So that's how I think is important that we get the young BCC musicians that engage with our Bajan and Caribbean artists. And we do over songs in spoons too. So not only do we do the Barbadian songs, we take the popular songs and do a spoons rhythm to it. So this year we're doing Michael Jackson medley and Spooge, you know,
nice.
Just keep the activity going, keep the culture and the heritage happening.
Yeah, mixing that homegrown appeal with that international appeal, that's the way to go if you want to expand beyond our horizons. That's the way to go.
Well, let me say this, that there seems to be this thought that Spooge is dead and Spooge isn't relevant, but if you consistently view the use of Spooge as Raw Spooge by the Drayton's 2, Dawn by the Escorts International, Our Day Is Come by Hugh Murray and the Solid Senders, then you are going to put a time limit and date on a style of music which transcends the original era that it came from. You still get Calypso today. You had Calypso since the 30s. You still get reggae today. You had that since the late 60s. So it's important for us to look at Spooge more in the light of Rick's recent use of it, Dwangerous, of course, with Rick, Breakfast in Bed. It wasn't irrelevant then.
Which one?
It wasn't unpopular. Yeah, it didn't lack impact. It won. And if you play that song today, people still want to hear it. People don't say, well, oh no, that's the Solid Senders. That's the Troubadours International. That's Snow Cone by Cassius Clay. It is 17, 18, 19. It's well done. It's well written.
Yes,
it's
yes,
well presented. Yes. And it instantly sends a signal that this is from Barbados. The beat by itself. Now, when you hear reggae, everybody instantly thinks Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Even if it's coming from an artist outside of Jamaica, you identify reggae with Jamaica. When you hear Calypso, you identify that with Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, yeah.
When you hear mariachi, as they call it, you identify it with Mexico, and it goes on. Tango with Argentina,
correct.
Samba with Brazil. So they don't say that,
correct,
about their music, which has been around for decades and maybe 100 or 150 years. But we have something which is 60 years, and we say, well, that can't work.
And it's already,
and you know,
and it's old already. Yeah, that's a good point.
If now I will say this. There's a lot of soca and calypso that is used in house music. House music between 128 and 130. It's just that they don't have that snare that we have, but they got the same kick. But in the mix by some of these dance DJs around the world, they would put a hand clap or a different sound effect where the soca snare would be. And it's only if you listen to that music, which is now called EDM as opposed to techno and house, that you recognize that. And then it becomes blatant on the slower soca side when you hear people like Justin Bieber and other persons, even Drake, using those soca rhythms, making millions.
Drake used it a lot.
But the people that do it day in, day out, and would love to get a piece of that financial action. They're not getting it, but at the same time, they're being told, you are not good enough to go on the international scene. Our music gets borrowed and used all the time. So we should be proud of what we have. I'm sure, as you say, Stefan, that once you got younger artists with songs that can connect with the issues of life and even enjoyment or despair, then people will take a different approach to understanding or analyzing the music that comes out. We've told generations of Barbadians, almost two generations of Barbadians now, Spooge is not good and you can't do anything with it. That's a joke. A lot of what Red Plastic does with Nicholas, Red Plastic Bag does with Nicholas Branca, the Spooge is in there. And that's one of the reasons why people can't copy Ragga Ragga well, because Spooge is in there.
Yeah. You can hear it. It's how we use the music, but that perception, Stefan, we had for Spooge. I could see in a small, you know, in a vacuum among your rehearsals, where we had rehearsals for Caribbean Ensemble, Stefan. That way, we can talk a little about Caribbean Ensemble and Caribbean music. That way is so important. I could have seen, although we are small samples, I could have seen how much everyone, because I was older than some of the rest, still young, but still was older. Had some 16, if some was 16, early 26, you understand? But still both of me enjoying the Spooge, because you, as you say, like, you will put the Spooge for anything, for any type of music, sorry. Like, if it's American music with a Spooge beat, like, you can still get accepted widely. Like, was that a careful thought coming out of your studies, or that happened by accident? Stefan
has to unmute the mic.
Stefan, you mute. Yeah, unmute, buddy.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
Right, I'll just say it again. When I was a student at BCC at the time, right, with Roger used to set an assignment where we had to interview musicians to try and get, he wanted to build a database of bios and of stories. And I got the opportunity to interview Vern Best, Il Verno del Congo. And he said something to me in that interview that lasted, that stayed with me right to today and will to the day. He said, if we do not play our music, who else is going to play it? Simply so. He just put it that direct. And I could
But it's very true.
So it doesn't matter if you have lofty goals or you want to take it internationally, or you say it brought back. That to me is secondary. What is primary is the expression. Just play it because other people that were that grew up around you, that grew up before you, is what they created. It's an homage to them, is complimenting their creativity. So whenever you play a Spooge song, it's saying like, yo, Jackie Opal, Troubadours, Drayton's two organizations, you guys did something that I think is credible.
Yep.
And you guys were from here, and I need to pay that homage to you.
Yes.
Simple. That's your philosophy. Whatever happens after that happens, right? But what I can tell you for the guys who are into the commercial element is that when we went to St. Lucia, so like it is a year before you came.
Yeah.
The St. Lucians requested that we play Spooge. They requested that we play Spooge. They were not.
Yes.
They wanted more Spooge when we dropped the Spooge menu.
I remember hearing Kevin and them talking about that, or Boston. But then I remember hearing a group of the guys talking about that.
Correct. They wanted Spooge. They did not say, well, I was just saying, y'all playing this nonsense. Give me some that. So a man wanted to hear Spooge, and that was at least, that's what, 2009? So we're talking 34 years. Well, I'm talking about 34 years since Spooge began to decline in Barbados. And there's still an audience for it in the other islands. And we don't seem to take that into account. Those are any commercial element. There's no reason why you shouldn't. You shouldn't be embarrassed, because to me, if you're embarrassed by that, you're embarrassed about something in your culture and in yourself. It is something that was created by Bajans, by locals, by people who thought it necessary to create it, and just keep playing it. You're gonna play all the time, but you can just play it as homage to them and to your culture.
Stefan, how important is it to create recorded works? Because I've said on this program many times, we've had generations of excellent live performers, male vocalists, female vocalists, bands of different types, playing in the hotel circuit, some finding success and touring the Caribbean, etc. The Merry Men, of course, outside of the region. But where the Merry Men stand out is that they recorded a lot of their work. So you could find maybe 15, 20 albums. With some artists that we love, you can't. There are no albums, maybe one or two singles, and certainly nothing available digitally. So as much talent as we have and as we're producing right now, you have already begun to record, to create original work, to tastefully cover other work. Why must there be something to play and share over a 10, 15 year period? Because we don't have a lot of material from our established artists, and that includes Calypsonians.
Yeah. There are a number of factors that play into that, Ronnie, as you well know. It's important to record. I know you do it because you recognize the importance of it. So your contributions to the Kropova Arena are there, Ronnie, as an artist. But for other artists, it's a number of factors, as I said. One of them is expense. It's not necessarily the cheapest thing to do. Another reason is fear. A lot of people are afraid of having that permanent expression put down, where people could always refer back to it years down the line, like, what was this you played? Is this it? You know what I mean? So men frightened that men who got those references, men they're not quite ready, because a lot of it, they feel like I need to spend 3 months making sure I got the perfect, perfect hit before I put something out. So that's the fear that men have, the fear of sounding bad. So it's a real fear, though, don't get me wrong. Some have it more than others, because it takes a lot of bravery to put something out there. And the other reason people get discouraged is really the expectation. Like, some people think they put something out there, they just gotta like it, they just gotta love it, or listen to it, or request it on the radio, they just got to play it. But that is not going to happen. That's not the reality of how things work. Anything, any product you put out there, if you put a new product, if you put out a new vanilla ice cream, everybody can go and buy it and lap it up, right? So that expectation you have is misguided. It's going to lead to disappointment. When you put out anything, you got to be realize where you are and why you're doing it for. You got to realize that ultimately, the only way you're going to have any sort of artistic impact is by putting it out. And that's your chief motivation. And then you work out, I have a plan, I have an expectancy that's realistic. What will happen when this goes out there? Right, so when I did the 6088 project, the culture stuff, I did not expect I'd be playing on the radio or all the time, or they just supporting it or whatever. I put that out because there needed to be a picture, a snapshot of what 6088 was at that particular time with that particular set of people. As a good thing, it happened, because soon after that, people went in different directions, they went in a different direction artistically. But it's important to take those photographs at those particular time. And that's why I see recording as, and that was my expectation from it, right? So I managed to keep the cost down, a lot of contribution from the guys coming through on playing, but the expectation of it was such that I wasn't disappointed if it wasn't playing on the radio. That was my why I got into it for. I wanted to take a snapshot, a picture, and have some sort of permanent record of the group at that time. And it's very, very important for us to do that. So 10 years, 15 years on the road, it might inspire somebody. You never know who it may inspire. And that's my honest story when it comes to the world.
Nice. Yeah. I agree. You know, but the point you made about recording being an expense, I figured that was one of the problems back in the day, because the time Stefan, the last week, Ronnie was speaking about music, right? And then I was thinking about, well, he was talking, I was thinking about the Caribbean Ensemble, and it was one fellow with about four girls, but there wasn't much duets, man or woman, boy and girl, duets to choose from. But I only realized that Stefan, when Ronnie spoke about it, like, we had a lot, and Ronnie called us some big names, like Benny Allen and Richard and so on. And then he said, like, how you could go to Motown or whatever, and you could get a whole horse of duets, man or woman duets. And it was only really realized, I think, by that time, there aren't many duets of that nature from that time. you figured that you figured pricing could have been the major issue for us not having a lot of those types of material at the time.
Well, yeah, I in my view, I think I like to say all the time, there are multiple things that led to that event. You gotta remember the whole things work in terms of the economies of the everyday musicians, like as you all know, the hustle.
Yeah.
Incentive, right? So if there's no immediate return on the album, it's very hard for somebody to make that sacrifice who's doing the hotel circuit, right? But you got bills to pay, you got children to feed, you got cars to put gas in, equipment to buy, etc. So to put out something, you're definitely looking for some sort of return or some sort of reason to do it. So yes, there are a lot of things that are missing because of that. There are a lot of things we don't sing about in terms of Barbados that happen in everyday life. As Nicholas Branca told me once, that we don't have songs about to get married to, a lot of songs to choose from to get married to in Barbados, songs about dance. We're missing those as well in our repertoire. So every time we have those moments, when the Prime Minister dies, that's his favorite example, we have to play American and European music because we do not have the repertoire to fill that gap, to occupy that space. Because over the years, people didn't have that incentive to release that music. What are you releasing it for? You know what I mean?
That's a great point.
We've got certain types of love music as well. We've got a lot of gaps. We've got a lot of jump out wave and walk up music because that was the incentive to create that music. You know, people get the gigs from Carnival, people get the tour out to the Carnival, crop over. So because of that, we've got a lot of that music. It's just a matter of how we can create those incentives for people to do it, to make it attractive to put out that sort of material.
You know that Ronnie speaking about not the need for the duets. I know you mentioned about songs like for deaf songs to get married to. I know it's there trying to think, and the only song that came to my mind was Edwin's song, I'm Moving On.
You mean for the funeral?
Yeah, I can't call five off my head quick. So I don't only five out of the thousands of artists we got over the years from the 50s to know, because I recently learned about a hungry man from the 50s who used to play Garon singing and learn about him, not songs he had, and had other artists like he that we don't know about at all. And from that time to know Ronnie, I can't call five songs, Beijing songs that you could play like in that instance. I could only think of Edwin's song, I'm Moving On.
You mean for the funeral?
Yeah, and I can't think of Marion's.
Well, I could tell you a song that plays at every wedding reception. That's Walk Away From Love.
Walk Away at the reception.
Sad. No. It's not that's sad. It's not sad because like Stealing Love on the Side, which plays at every reception, it gets people on the dance floor. But you're not.
Okay.
But you're not gonna play them when the bride and groom are walking down the aisle. Stealing Love on the Side and Walk Away From Love. Right? Now,
it's true.
One of the things which Stefan spoke to, and it's become more apparent as we listen to radio and we witness the limited capacity and scope for events of a particular nature. We had no Crop Over Festival this year. All those songs that were created for either Pickety Crop, which have a certain type of framework if you want to be successful, right?
I think we agree with this.
You don't want to offend anybody if you want to get in the finals. Sweet Soaker, that apparently must have certain themes only, and then the Power Soaker, which is basically dying, and now we're back to one show with 20 songs. Now, in the absence of the activity that those songs speak to, they don't become songs that you connect with right now as you would have done prior to COVID coming into Barbados in March this year.
Very true.
The songs which are reflective, the songs which encourage, the songs which recognize frailty and weakness and need and speak of justice, etc., those and being well and overcoming obstacles, those type of songs make more sense right now than driving down the road in the midst of a pandemic, very little work, people hungry, people need assistance. I'm not talking about that because that specifically speaks to social issues, but I'm talking about things that generally...
No, I mean the song.
Yeah.
I mean the topics.
Let go and cut loose. Now, the reality is, if you look at the cruise industry in Barbados right now, I'm talking about the pleasure cruises. People are literally, once they've got the mask and the ID and they've gone on board, they're behaving as though COVID doesn't exist. When you go to certain clubs, and I go to certain clubs, it's as if COVID didn't exist. But there's a different mood when you hear those songs that spoke about cooler fets and cooler cruises. True. And we working up from St. Vincent to St. Lucia to Notting Hill to Toronto. Those things just don't seem to make any sense. It's not that the songs aren't good, but...
They
depend on a certain reality, presence, and existence of specific activities and seasons. But look at the songs from overseas. When you look at artists in Europe and America. Now, those countries, for the most part, have four seasons, right? And I ain't talking Vivaldi here, but he had four seasons too. When you get to the summer in Europe, those techno and house songs and what they consider island songs, those happy songs, they do exceptionally well commercially when Europe is warm, when the festivals are on, same festivals, but not Calypso festivals, and when people feel the need to enjoy themselves. Because the way they dress and behave in June, July, August, they can't do that in October, November, December. And a lot of the songs that are introspective, because remember, death is a part of winter. What precedes winter is autumn, where things are starting to die. Spring is about rebirth, and summer is about enjoying the benefits of that. How many songwriters in Barbados write like that, right? So you got the talent to write songs that make sense all over the world, because the majority, look, Turn Me On by Kevin Little is a love song and it's sexy. Tempted to Touch by Rupee is a love song and it's sexy.
That song is
Hot, correct. Hot, Hot by Arrow is a song that just encapsulates the Caribbean. Bob Marley's One Love, People Get Ready, which is part of Curtis Mayfield's song, a song of inspiration and hope. Three Little Birds on the same album. These are songs that are universal, not because the guy sat down and said that, but what was in their spirit and in their soul was identified by an audience outside of where they live, and it was embraced because it makes sense to anybody that lives anywhere. So I know that from a parochial perspective as a Calypsonian, I will mash and I will lash certain topics and people because that's what it's about for a specific purpose here, and it's a time capsule. Believe it or not, it's a time capsule, even if it's not appreciated in a commercial sense. But then you need other things. Look, that song by Ivory, When You're Not Around. Bread could have done that. America could have done that, right? Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Creedence Clearwater Revival. A brilliant song. Every time I play that song, someone calls and asks me, which group is that? I mean, I'm going to tell you on the radio, but that's the quality of music we're talking about. And these are the things that you have to think about. So and the reality is, as you know, Sluggy, because you work with a lot of the young dancehall guys, the catchy thing right now is Bad Badus, where the gangster lyrics to the beats produced by predominantly one producer or a group of producers, it gets momentum, it gets a little work, it gets some street cred, etc. And the same thing with Trinidad. I've also got some stuff from Vinci, which is pretty hot as well. But then who is that going to speak to? Why can't we have other songs written on those same rhythms that someone will hear and say, hey, I like that. Tales of What Happens in the Street is fine, but a lot of the posturing and a lot of the braggadocio, because I come from a rap background, so I know what that is about. It makes sense for us a certain purpose, but how far is it going to take you?
Yeah, and this will happen now to Ronnie with that music, right? Like a lot of the men, like especially crew, especially CJ and crew and Sadis and those guys, seeing more money, although the money real small, seeing far more money than they ever seen in royalties from just being on Spotify and selling in Trinidad and Canada and certain places. So if the man, even if the man get $300 or $400 US, switching a lot of money, that can be still more than what they see. So that's where the guys putting out that content, the content pain. And then when the fellas hold their own fests and events all year, but they see it as them could hold event anytime of year. It ain't gonna be hot man crop over, it could be at any time of year, and they can at least get 600 people.
And that's right. That's right.
Some
and
of them seen it.
And they have built their own bubble, if you want to call it that, inside COVID from an entertainment perspective.
No, you're correct.
Because those are you're the correct. Events that people are supporting. Now, I was speaking with my colleagues on Hot 95.3 FM. Because people don't see the big shows by Freddie and Rudy, because it's impossible for those gentlemen to be able to hold the type of shows logistically right now. There's a lot of activity taking place on the entertainment scene, and a lot of it is 30 and under, because these breakfast parties now, because if you think about it, a lot of people don't really fancy being out till 4 o'clock in the morning once you reach a certain age. So a lot of these events now are moving up. They're going from 6 p.m.
yeah,
to midnight
is,
or from 10, right?
Yeah, that is.
And the comfort of saying, yeah, well, is, I am more aware of what's happening around my surroundings. I can still get home and not isolate myself, but secure myself. And then there's a type of dress. The fellas with the flowered shirts and the neatly tailored palazzo or whatever sure. pants they're wearing now. You know, everybody wears the same thing, but everybody wore the same thing 20 and 40 years ago and 60 years ago as well. So you drink the same thing, you wear the same thing, you all dance the same way to the same songs. The ladies all look a certain way with the eyelashes and the hair and the specific type of skirt and whatever it is that is being worn today. And there's an industry happening right now while everybody else that's old scratches their head and say, apart from a karaoke line, where am I going today? We got entrepreneurs. So how much of the music that is being recorded suits that circuit? Because there is a circuit. You hear American artists from the 60s talk about the Chitlin circuit. What the Chitlin circuit basically was venues where black artists could play, because they weren't allowed in certain arenas and they were not allowed white audiences, etc. But they survived. So it's about survival. These guys hustle. They hustle for a living and they say, well, my music is my hustle. It's legitimate. It's legal. And I haven't broken any laws. I may not get airplay for certain things, but there's 400 people that are moving around in the same way 500 people moved around from 10 to 10 in the 80s and the 90s. But what I will say, one of the common complaints or observations about the music that's being created within this Bajan Bad Badass dancehall scene is the quality of the videos. Uh-huh. And there's no need for the quality of the videos to be poor. Not when you got people out there like Scenes Entourage that can do brilliant work for you. Selwyn and those guys. If the fellas really, if the fellas want to go to the next level, stop thinking that you have to be popular in Jamaica. Do not care if Billboard in America accepts you. There's a market for dancehall and reggae and soca and what they call world music everywhere else in the world. And right now, African music, Afro beats, all the people like Burna Boy, the people like Davido, and even in gospel, Sinak, who's the biggest gospel artist right now, they don't depend on America.
Mm-hmm.
They don't depend on America, or they don't depend on Jamaica to accept them as reggae artists. And if you're really serious about being an artist,
the whole market out there outside America and Jamaica.
And I want to say one last thing before I just sit back and listen. Stefan, with so many opportunities to fiddle around and create a beat, because you know thousands of kids in Barbados are doing that. And it's basic. If you listen to hip hop, there's nothing major about the musical aspect of popular hip hop and popular dancehall. But if you listen to the best of that simple format music bed for a rapper or a chanter or a dancehall singer, if you look at the people that produce them at the top level, they're not fiddlers. They're not plonkers. They are real musicians. And if you doubt me, go and check things like Genius, where you will get the story of song A or song B. And when you look at, in most instances, the quality of musicianship and the training that those persons have gone through to create something simple, people need to recognize that it is a legitimate professional craft and talent that allows you to minimize the need to overdo in order to create a platform that this generation or this type of talent can perform on. But to think that you can just go and plink plonk and you become something great. In this era, you can do that with Vine, you can do that with Instagram, but if you really check the best of them out there creating that seemingly simple music, they're able to create it because they have the knowledge as to what is relevant, what is sufficient, and then now when they need to do the extravagant things, they can do it.
That's a fact. Well, Ronnie, I disagree with you there. In terms of, I think it's important to fiddle, because that's all started with fiddling. Rap started with fiddling, as you well know, sir. The whole point of those particular genres are based on people without the skill, those without the training, who by using their own what the academics call the aesthetic, the stuff they grew up listening to, and try to build and try to use this machinery to create new sounds. So I mean, the case of the Sleng Ting rhythm is the excellent example of what I'm talking about, where he took a Casio toy keyboard, ran it through a recording device and get men to chant on it, and it's a seminal rhythm in dancehall. It opened up the door for so many other dancehall artists, right? So I hear your point about the drills of the gutline guys having training, which is true, but also the fiddling is important. And I think the agent dancehall that is a fiddling, where the fiddling needs to occur, but the content needs to come up on it, and that's the most important thing these days. It will come out, it has to come out, and reach a pattern on the whole method of what the dancehall artists make in terms of content. Need the content there, Ronnie. So I hear you. I hear your point about the professionalism and training, but the content is also equally important.
But Stefan, who's going to play it on stage? If you want to use live musicianship, who's going to play it on stage? Whether it is a simple rhythm or not. Okay, you talk about Sleng Ting. We know the history of that with King Jammies. What about things like Girly Girly, also by King Jammies? Chiang Kai-shek, also by King Jammies? Those aren't simple things. They appear simple, but persons who know what they can do in terms of their ability have determined, well, it's a simple approach, and this is how we do it. But when it comes to playing it live, it requires some kind of dynamism from a live band. You can't just go on stage and fake that. You can tell the difference. Look at Sizzler's band. I mean, and he's written many popular rhythms as well as two original songs.
You're talking about particular settings of when guys perform this recorded music, but the other settings that use no live band. People do not intend when they create it for live bands to be ever used. People come on stage with DJs, some of the biggest tour acts now, man, just on stage with DJ.
That's true.
Channel over DJ. They don't think about the live band experience.
That's true.
As a live musician, you know, and what I've been pushing over the years, I see the value of live music, but that's not what it's intended for. It's intended for these guys to put out their creativity, no matter the medium. They should have let the idea of, oh, can a live band play this? That should not be paramount in their thoughts. What should be paramount is creating the expression that's honestly them and putting it out there for their audiences who want to consume it, for the communities to come together and rally around something that they see as being important to them. That's what I think is the most important thing and the most crucial thing when it comes to music making in general, especially from working class communities such as ours that are away from the mainstream and all the money and all the capital that surrounds the American system. I think the creativity and content are the two things we should be really pushing and encouraging when it comes to those guys.
Which leads us to Bashment then, because Bashment rhythms essentially have utilized samples or ideas from predominantly Jamaican origin, in the same way that there was a period in the 90s when jazz music and before that James Brown samples predominantly provided a background for a specific generation of rappers. Bashment Soca now, creating original Bashment Soca rhythms. Creating original Bashment Soca rhythms versus taking a sample and looping it and speeding it up. For the most part, we speed things up in Barbados. We seem to have an aversion to to the original pitch. And that happened in the days of turntables, because plus 16 used to be the standard, or plus 8 on a Technic 1200. And Jamaican artists used to note, wow, I have to sing it at that speed. Because when they come here and sing it, because Tiger famously did Rap on Rhythm at Cheapside opposite the post office, and the crowd wasn't happy because it was extremely slow. And he also had Melba at the same time. But he was not aware that the DJs here were playing the song. Remember, you had no master key like you have on a digital controller now, where you can speed it up by 16 beats and keep the same key. It sounded like a chipmunk, but that's what we liked. But so Bashment Soca creating an original rhythm now versus using his samples.
Yeah, Ronnie, I think it's all... I look at it, I could be wrong, but I look at it as the more people you have involved in something, the more ideas and the more avenues and creative directions art form can go. So if you look at where Spool started, Wendy, at the height of its popularity, because certain songs began popular, everyone was following the same template, same instrumentation. Mm-hmm. We look at Skia. That's a very key and the best example. Ska music sounded like a carbon copy. Each band played the same way, the same how, the same instrumentation. However, because there were so many voices involved, but so many one important dissenting voice in the person of Trojan Records, Duke Reed, who did not like Ska, who took it in another direction, then all of a sudden we had a new set of creativity happening. I think it's inevitable, Ronnie. The more people that are involved in Bashment Soca, and the audience see the man, a little terrorist, boy, say, Terry, this CMB, CMB, this else, and if that takes off, what other direction opening
is
creativity and content coming at this stage, and keep it and not shut it down by the critic in the early. Once we let the guys keep creating, we'll be amazed, I'm sure, in the next 5-10 years, what could come of it, right? The issue with Spooch is that there was a shutdown. Where men said, Mali, Tarnas, everything sounds alike, and the turning away from the creativity and content is what led to a certain phase of Spooch dying the way it died, right? If the guys had keep creating, eventually it would have changed. It would have changed organically. It would have changed because somebody wanted to make more money. Somebody tired of hearing this. Audience is tired of hearing it. That's why I look at it. So I said, just keep the music coming, guys. And if any basketball, so local producers, any rappers or anything out there, keep working at your craft. Keep putting it out. Keep getting feedback. Send it to Ronnie. He'll give you some ideas of what to do. Send it to other people. And eventually it would evolve. It would change and become a different music than what you intended it. But it will bring a whole new audience, I feel, to the table.
Now, people talk about content in Bashment Soca. I said I was going to shut up, but I have to come on this one. Now, when Bashment Soca...
No, you can't.
Now, when Bashment Soca's come out, invariably it's, you know, dance a certain way, certain position, etc. There are very few songs in dancehall soca that speak about experiences other than party. And if you have 5 songs on a Bashment Soca rhythm, nobody's singing. In the same way that Sanchez would have been on any rhythm that King Jammies came out, as well as Flower Gone, as well as Ninja Man, as well as Daddy Lizard. In fact, as a DJ back then, you'd pay attention to if Thriller U was on it, if Sanchez was on it, if Wayne Wonder was on it, because all the chanters would be on, and then you would have a singer. And if it wasn't a male singer, there would be a female singer who belonged to the studio or belonged to the label, a Nadine Sutherland or Elaine or whoever was with that particular crew. And so when you see them move out, they still have a little variety in their stage show, as opposed to 10 fellas chanting about the same thing and nobody singing a song of inspiration, nobody singing maybe a gospel track, nobody singing a reality tune about coming up from the ghetto. You get a lot of them now in contemporary dancehall, but we don't have that in Bashment Soca. Look at the artists that we have. Look at 10 songs that they've done since 2010. There really isn't much variety there. Even though, as you indicate, Stefan, there's a certain target, a certain demand that people are satisfying, but they can do more.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that happened when 2016 the Bashment Soca competition started. when the second revival of Beijing Dub, as they call it, Bashment Soka, the second, when it happened post 2011, there was more creativity at the time because the stakes weren't as high, right? So you had Crime Cinema with his show. You had Brutal Crankstar talking about his various life experiences. You had those things happening. But as soon as the competition hit, a man offering $100,000 to sing a song in Cropover in Carnival time. But then, obviously, the men are going to abandon those other projects and focus on trying to win that money. So that is what shifted the direction of that music, in my view. And nobody's going to be singing because they say, Stiffy Wayne, I hear sing, so I sing it because I want to win that money. So he's doing the same thing. He's singing the same way, making those clever metaphors and making people laugh. But as I said, if the creativity happens outside of Bashment Soka competition, and we encourage those guys to keep creating no matter what, you're going to get that, Ronnie, man. That is going to happen. It's going to be inevitable. Somebody could have heard what you just said or have been seeing over the last couple of years and said, man, when you get in the studio, again, they don't want these type of tracks, right? And I can assure you, though, that if it does happen and the song takes off, other people are going to be behind doing the same thing, Ronnie. It just requires that innovation to break through and be successful, and then we're going to see changes. It's happened throughout the history of popular music. It requires the innovators, the movers, to have that creative space and that encouragement to keep doing what they're doing to influence the others. Once that happens, then you're going to see the changes. So we need to encourage everybody, because we're not sure who's that innovator, who's going to be that James Brown, who is going to be that Miles Davis, within those set of youngsters coming through, who's going to be that Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, whoever. We need to encourage all those guys to keep creating, and then we'll see what will happen 5 to 10 years down the road.
Nice, yes. I agree. Now, speaking about innovation, and then speaking about the youth, and speaking about 5 or 10 years down the line, something you did, Stefan, on a tour, you had a Beijing tour, a tour that I thought was so incredible, but was so simple. When you did the Cartel 1688, I think it was Straight Jeans and Fitted. I think it was that song that you did with 16.
I think you referred to Clarks when we did Clarks in a big band.
Right. Yes. No. Obviously, before your time, that wouldn't have happened a lot like that. Obviously, it would be within genre, within the specific setting. So you are a dub that would play. But before you wouldn't see, as far as I know and I've been following, you wouldn't see much people with big bands play those type of songs. What made you want to be the person to risk something like that, bro?
Well, I think I am an artist. I listen to track of it myself, and a part of that artist is not being concerned about the reaction before the product comes out. In other words, let the creativity drive you as opposed to the reaction driving you. I don't operate in a commercial field as an artist, so I can't tell everybody to be this way, because I do other things to make money, like teach. So that allows me to do a big band chart of Clarks, right? Like my whole way of survival was playing big band music for people to dance in a hotel. I would never have tried that, right? But because they have other things bringing in money, which allows me to be artist and try those things. So that's why I tried it, because my view in terms of Caribbean music is that it's all music, right? There's all one common, there's enough commonality and enough rootedness. I want to talk to academic, but there's enough rootedness across the field of Black music that there should always be a way we can interchange them easily. It's just a matter of having the necessary bravery in some cases, stupidity in others, to try and make it work, right? So to try and bring Book Vibes Cartel into the big band setting, right? I also did Boots, where I did the military rhythm. I did Boots on top of it in a big band as well too. So military dancehall rhythm, because it's military, and you gotta be singing about Boots.
Yes. I remember that.
So that's what I think, right? So I think in that kind of way, it's just okay. I don't encourage other people to do it if they don't feel it, if that's not what they want to do, honestly. But for me, that's what I see it. And even he handles Caribbean Messiah thing, like taking Caribbean rhythms and putting it under a 300-year-old piece written by a dead German. You know what I mean? Like that in itself is ridiculous, may I think about it, but it just...
Yeah, to think about it.
Right, correct. Right, so I just say it could work, and that's where I operate from, because I have a space to create. I'm blessed, I'm fortunate, and I have a job that I can still eat while it allowed to be this creative. And I say don't expect it from people, not because they're brilliant or anything, but it's just because other people got other demands on their life. So like certain crop over artists got brilliant songs because they need to vacate in order to eat for the year. So they gotta stay within certain boundaries, and they gotta be able to know I can't spend this amount of money experimenting. I need to have a song that hitting. So that's the obligation they have. But you don't have those obligations. So I'm allowed to create and be innovative in that way. So that's what I was telling Ronnie. The guys at home now are young. That's the time they should be innovating too, because mommy's still putting food on the table. They can still go up with granny and get a breadfruit and fish. So there's a time now there we should encourage the youngsters to create too, because we never know what they will come up with that can push our music or push the music in the Caribbean and their expression now to be heard by world audiences.
But Stefan, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, because if you look at hip-hop's history, you recognize that the role of the DJ is pivotal to that. You look at people like Grandmaster Flash and DJ Kool Herc. A lot of people don't understand. They talk about the trio, the triumvirate in hip hop, which is Afrika Bambaataa, who's an American, Kool Herc, who's a Jamaican, and Grandmaster Flash, who's a Barbadian, who was born here in Bridgetown. So you had things like Run DMC doing a song called Sucker MCs, where there was no bass line. And the musician producer said, hey, man, we need to put a bass line in there. Because if you remember, the first big hit commercially for rap was Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, which basically replayed Good Times by Sheik. So when you had Curtis Blow with songs like Christmas Rapping, Sucker MC had no bass line. And this is Run DMC breaking out in 1983. And Russell Simmons said, no, we don't want no bass line, because we just like the kid. We just like the beat. The kids are moving to the beat. They're not interested in the bass line. So the qualified musician didn't understand it. But as time went by, you saw a lot more of that musicianship come into hip hop. So my point basically was that the people who are producing and make their entry, you know, reversing samples and getting crazy noises and sticking it into their program, should they become more literate musically so they can actually create and do more things and identify certain things that can enhance where they plink-plonked originally? That was my point. You can't tell me that, you know, Tim, generally, Timbaland is a musician. The Roots, one of the biggest, best rap groups, with Questlove on the drums and all the other guys in the band, they actually do one of the night shows. I can't remember, there was Jimmy Kimmel or one of them there.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Right, so the idea of just turntable or whatever the case it is you use right now, controller, that comes with a culture. Same thing with the Stone Loves and all of those sound systems in Jamaica where you got the 45 instrumental and the guy jumps on stage with a microphone, fine. But you can do a lot more. You can improve it then. You have more scope. You can branch from there if you're willing to say, you know what, I got this interest, but I need to learn a few more things. Because if I go to Pernell or to Roger and I hum something and you know, I have a melody or I have a line for the brass, it's a gift that I have, but I can't do what they do. And then they would tell me, come back and all right, great. And then when I hear what they've done and what they can apply to it because of the knowledge that they have, again, they don't use everything. They're not going to pelt Rachmaninoff or Mozart and stuff. They might use something that they're familiar with from there just at some point in the song. If the song's 5 minutes long, then there might be 3 or 5 seconds in there where they just put a little touch in there. So the listener thinks, hold on a minute, did I hear something? Okay, it captures me. All I'm saying is that those guys can develop and it can broaden their horizons. And when you see people that have been around for a long time, if they live long enough, that usually happens.
Yeah, that's the case, Ronnie. But Remember, if you refer back to your example, the reason why soccer MCs happened is because Russell Simmons had the fortitude to continue with it. He had the confidence to, push back against the musicians telling him not. In Barbados, we do not have, I have not seen all the time that level of confidence, right? Where people say, nah, I'm a Ronnie Clark. He ain't know what he talking about. I ain't brought my stuff, right? We need to foster stuff. We still need to encourage. We still at that stage, we need to encourage as
they'll drop out there. Still waiting on you.
Teeth, right? And so give them the necessary for it. Do create those venues and spaces for the youngsters to come forward, to give them the confidence. Because what we're really trying to do here as artists, you know, it's my mission, is to build confidence in the Caribbean experience, in the Caribbean life.
Yes.
Value. So it's like, this is who I am. This is who I am unapologetically. I'm not trying to be anybody else. There's the music I play. There's my representation, the honest representation of who I am as a agent. And that comes by saying, in terms of music now, and where my work has been, is that in music, this is who I am. There's the music I write. Here, world, this is me. That's who I think we should be encouraging the youngsters to have confidence in who they are as a people. It's something that governments need. You need a confident population in order to develop. If your people have no confidence and belief that things should be better or they deserve better, then you're going to have a society that not many people want to live in.
Yes. No, speaking about, I heard you spoke about Caribbeans, kind of Messiah earlier, Stefan, and that was picked up overseas as well. I remember reading online about, you were speaking about the Hand of Messiah being picked up by someone overseas. Can you speak to us about that?
That project is a whole
and the cultural connection.
Yeah, you hear me now, Sluggy?
Yes, please.
Yeah, good. That project itself is a whole story. That's a whole program, documentary, whatever. Nice. Yeah, it was picked up. It was the Halle, the Handel's festival in Halle, which is where Handel was born, run by Germans. They heard the material, and off of the material, hearing the material and reading about what the project was about, they invited us for 2021 to bring a reduced cast to do the festival. And it's a massive investment by them, by the way, because what they're willing to invest in the product shows they have some sort of belief in what it was all about and what it is trying to do. So before COVID, they had laid the plans in place. So I touched base with them the other day. They said if they can get the protocols in place, they're still on, because Germans, as Ronnie well knows, are some of the most organized set of people you could ever hope to encounter in terms of how they approach most things, from time, evaluating time, to valuing commitment to a project. So they have planned ahead. So they said the project is still on. So once they can get the health protocols in place, because COVID has obviously put everything under a certain level of uncertainty. Yeah, true. So the project was picked up, and it was a real confidence booster for myself, as well as everyone who was involved in the project, that the people who know a lot about Handel, because this is what the guys do as a job. Your job is literally working with the Handel's house and everything Handel related, saw something in a project written in tiny Barbados that they are willing to invest money in, good money that they get from the German government, and bring these people over in order to reinterpret Handel using Caribbean rhythms. That was a real big vote of confidence, because that production got spooge in it, you know. That production got tuck in it. We did Hallelujah, of course, in tuck music. So every opportunity of things, financially, we can get the support necessary. The COVID doesn't take another turn for the worst. We'll be playing Hallelujah Chorus in Halle in Tuck. You understand what I mean? And that is a real vote of confidence for my ancestors and the work.
Yes.
For all the men who are scrubbing over the years.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That we can have an honest expression of a song that was part of our culture in terms of Hallelujah Chorus in the Anglican Church. These covers who are playing the same Christmas music, rocking on the street. And we put that together in a production that was created by Barbadians, performed by Barbadians, to go to Germany and say, Germans, this who we are as Barbadian people, to me, that's a big vote of confidence. Right? That's a real plus.
And let me say that, as I was referring to, certain music immediately identifies the origin or the country associated with that style of music, Trinidad Calypso. So by going to Deutschland and playing Spooge, as you say, Stefan, you're immediately, without even saying a word, you are announcing Barbados is there, because they're not inviting you to do exactly what the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra are doing or the Boston Pops. They're inviting you because of what you did in a Barbadian context. And if more people would understand that, it'd be better.
Correct. And I guess the point in that, and the point I've been trying to make with my work, is that there are so few of us in Barbados that we are unique by our own expression. So if we try to play Handel's Messiah the way it was originally intended, we will get nowhere near Germany, Ronnie.
You're right.
Because they don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it. We've got like thousands of other orchestras that play Handel's Messiah.
Correct.
Thousands, literally thousands.
You're right.
But when we do it now, we're playing Tuck and Spooge now, it immediately becomes a unique marker and a unique product that only a few people could execute, because Barbados got 280,000 people, Germany got 60 million.
Correct.
So it's a unique, once you are honest to yourself, and that's why, be honest to yourself with that Beijing accent, with that Beijing expression, you are immediately placing your brand and your expression as being unique, because only few people are here to execute a performance.
What I find ironic, and you know the history, so I'm not teaching you, but I'm just mentioning it, so people will put it in perspective and context.
Perspective, yes.
It's that you mentioned the traditional Anglican Handel's Messiah Hallelujah chorus that we grown up in the church hearing. But the reality of that work is that work was rejected by many when it first came out. Now, not yours, I mean the original.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. It was
he was like a rebel in his time
people didn't feel it at all. Some people didn't about it. But he forged ahead. And once again, he was a brave artist, because somebody said, "Mike, done with this here, I'm gonna plant some corn, I'll raise some animals and things." But as an artist, you always get people that don't like your stuff, and you're going to push through and say, "Well, maybe there's somebody out there that will dig this, and this expression is me." So once I'm willing to push for myself, I have confidence in myself, then we can see what happens after that. And that's what Handel did, basically. I know he can boast and say, like, wherever he is, look, man down in Barbados, redoing my music trend of 50 years after he did. I'm gone. That is a piece that you all say was no good, right? So he can have that to say as well, too, because he was...
Correct.
Right? And that's an important lesson Ronnie just brought up in terms of that history.
Right? Yeah, it's very...
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. We don't know what's going to happen next year with COVID, but
Warsaw, Stefan, in Germany.
Yeah, Warsaw. So what's going to happen is that when some info comes out, I'll be sharing it with social media supporters and people who are interested in it. Maybe I have somebody over there who will want to come and see it if they're in that area. I just see what happens after that, Sluggy Man, because that's the only thing you can do, trying to be honest to what you're trying to do over here in Bolivar.
Listen. Seeing how infectious our music was to people overseas through the police band, half a decade police band, and through you, made me appreciate our music more. Rene could have went to Grenada. The performers sound that no one ever heard. And before we finish the show, the entire school was singing my song. After them hearing it for the first time ever.
Correct, Sluggy. One girl of mine. You can call the name of the song, I think you know.
One girl, of course,
was a massive hit. And you remember what else happened on that? Nobody referring back to local expression. You remember when we did the tour praise song? It was Wicked Jab that we performed.
Yes.
On that tour, the place was flattened, Sluggy. You remember that?
Yes.
Me and my girls, and the last part of that set me there, the place was flattened, and we and people coming up look for autographs from Ray Shad, autographs from you and the Keisha, because they connected with our music, man. Because
we I signed so many, Stefan, I signed so many autographs, right? And Rashad, right? Rashad, who just had the image, but it was this rock star looking fella, but playing BJ music, because that was the, probably, and plus he was a good looking fella, he was young, but he looked like a rock star, but playing Caribbean music.
That sang
the school wild. I mean, he ain't sing a song. He ain't do nothing. You know what I mean? We ever had the best song sitting that I could still better hear you good. But just that image, and he ain't this band playing this, and he get the most attention that they do all of us. And the people singing back the song and singing it, and then we did Spooge as well. Right?
Yeah.
And their interpretation is what Spooge was. There was some of the children asking about reggae. Let me say Calypso, they were acting about reggae. If school just like reggae. That question duly had me. So, and although it might have been just three persons that asked me, for three different people, Stefan asked me, school just like reggae is like what? Like, that's their interpretation. That is strange.
Yeah, indeed, but we know they gotta frame it somehow, because that's the first time they're hearing it. So yeah,
close to saying popular, right.
Yeah, correct. So that'll work out from your mind. Yeah, that's what I'm here already. So that's what it began.
Right.
Which gets us and create that interest. Good point. And create that interest.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that I was saying that's true, but no, you say that is like. And then if I was saying, like, if you smell something, you can see what I close it. That smells like vanilla, but that ain't really vanilla. That I'm gonna say
correct. Exactly. So let me ask this man if that's vanilla or saying that's that he going there.
The amounts of vanilla, yeah, but he putting a little fruity in it, man. This is that's all right. So he got you. So them like no sky, them no reggae, then they hear Spooge. Then he's closest to identify, but which, like you say, is a good thing. That's a good way of looking at it. And I always love how your brain think. Remember, we was on a bus, and so the ones asking about the population of Grenada, right? You know, some people say things and don't realize how much it impact people life, right? But you tell something, you say that there was even anything significant. They was asking the population of Grenada, Stefan, in the bus, and say I heard say a number. And then you called the number, and you was right on the population of Grenada when we was in the van going up. And we laugh in the bus. And Hood said, don't laugh, Stefan. And you said, and I know much, just no more than you.
Yeah. I can't remember that story, though.
Listen, it's small things, right? Ain't sure another moment that had me. But this is the first time when you hear you talk about how small we are, but how good that is. You mentioning that made me, because before BCC, believe it or not, it was heavy on Bajan music, yes, Stefan. But it's lucky that these people know enough for strictly Bajan. That was a mimic kind of BCC, as you know, like balance bad is singing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The Caribbean thing with me, like one girl come up because of Caribbean ensemble. There's people that know. I never had that song before. That song created for school, for Caribbean ensemble, just around here with Caribbean ensemble. I re-recorded, but that was a song that was written for Caribbean ensemble. That didn't exist nowhere before, and that happened because of school. You understand? That's showing how important school is and crossing cultures while sticking to education. You understand? That happened because of schooling. But you constantly over the time believing in Caribbean music, but talking about how small we are and how good it is what made me rethink. No, I went on Caribbean music heavy Stefan, because I was looking at it negatively before local had the word local before. Had a negative connotation to me. You understand? I didn't see it as something real good and proud. It because the whole people were speaking about local, it made me feel like it's something inferior. You understand? But how you see it made me see it different, because it was like, wait, since we so small and the world so big, that means don't care how much artists got from Barbados. It's still a small number. They'll be real different. Like, they could got 40,000 to be that the same and spread out in the world. And we still is a small drop in the world.
Exactly. But I'm glad I imparted some sort of way of making you look at things differently. That's what teachers and educators are supposed to do, not create clones of themselves, but create people that can, you know, take a little piece from me, take a little piece from Roger, whoever, Ronnie, and then do your own thing and your own approach to living and expression. So I'm glad I imparted that on you, Sluggy. But I got to run. I don't know if this best time. I have to love and leave you guys. It's been really, really good. And thanks for having me so much, Sluggy and Ronnie. Keep doing the work, Sluggy. You and Randy, you know, you really need it at this time. People need outlets, people need artistic spaces in order to get that energy out of their system, right?
I respect that.
Ironic, I still gonna come and interview you. You're a mountain of knowledge in that AT scene. And
you have to, Stefan, you have to.
At length, man. He's a really good guy, a real good
Yes.
Person. Yes, Stefan, I would like to say.
Before you go, Stefan, before you go.
Stefan, hold on, I just want to say.
Before you go, go ahead, Ronnie.
I just want to say two things. First of all, now you mentioned the AT scene. Obviously, the late 80s into the 90s, we would have had Aswad Man Shop and Penthouse International. And David Brathwaite would have been, along with Stephanie, the persons responsible for Aswad Man Shop and then Penthouse International. And it's no coincidence that Lil Rick's career was given tremendous momentum. Initially, of course, with Shane Badouin Sounds Good and the hits that he had, you know, the Don't Get Yam Out, etc. Before that, he would have gone on to the Summer Jam Boogie stage as a new artist. But Penthouse International took Rick as a DJ into a different dimension altogether. And the ads that he used to do for Aswad were very creative, because if you know the Man Shop history, first one on radio would have been Third World Man Shop. I think Ninja Man would have done an ad for that. That would be Jack, and then you had Casey and U2 Man Shop. I would have done the jingles, and then Natalie and Ram came after. But at the same time, Rick was dropping new jingles like every 2 or 3 weeks. So it was like a little industry there. Ras Mikey and Ninja Man as well. That the jingles were being creative to see who could highlight their store in a fresher way than the other one. So. Penthouse International, of course, legendary out there in Palmetto. And David has passed. And I'm sure, as one of the persons who studies the culture exceptionally well, Stefan, you will acknowledge too that that gentleman, there's so many unsung heroes, you know. We've got these big scenes, and the general public may not know.
I'm familiar with him, and that's an important period to me.
Yeah.
I mean, many periods are important. I just hope that there's some sort of investment made in that resource and getting those documentaries and those stories written down so they don't get forgotten. People learn from them. Because that's the other thing. People talk about knowing where you come from. But part of that is knowing what direction people took and the mistakes people made and the positives and successes people had in order for you to take that information and implement it in your life. And if that don't exist, if you never hear them stories, then how you can ever hope to learn from them?
So that's the reason I do this show, buddy. That's the reason I do this show, to document a lot of these stories so you can have something that'll be there documented forever. So thanks for the inspiration. And before you go, Stefan, just tell us the website where to find you so we can check out all the projects that you released so far.
Right, yeah, just go over to StefanWalker.com. It's pretty simple. You've got stuff there. There's some articles that some people have possibly read before from it. I think my Ramesses article went viral in Barbados.
Oh my. I'm sure Ramesses is smiling because the amount of attention Ramo got. And you know, here's the irony. Ramesses would have been in Ram Grove too with Terry. Terry Harewood, a.k.a. Grover, when they were at CP in 1986. Yeah. But Ramesses also was part of that lineup in 1993.
Part of the 80s, too.
In 1993, when Rupert won Teen Talent, Ramesses came fourth. And Kareem was in there, and Tony Nova was in there. Mm. Kathy Ann Payne was in there. Maria Williams was in there. Sherry-Ann Boyce, right. Sandra Boyce. Oh, that was the big one at the gym where the car was won. Ramesses was there doing Barrington.
Yeah. That's how you got... Stefano, you got to say over 5 hours with Ronnie Stefano. That's
yeah, you know, over 5 hours. Yeah, yeah, it was right. An article in defense of Ramesses. Yeah, but StefanWalker.com. You could get information about the fort, but because they also compiled the fort, but digitally because it was disappearing. So I put that stuff on Amazon so people could come and pick that up as well, too. So you always have the fort songs are wrong. I think the job is pretty much not done, but this is a long way of where it was when it first started because Amazon, so hopefully they're wrong or well. It's a digital copy, so it should be on people's phones, so we won't lose those four songs.
Correct.
Yeah, I just want to say to you, Stefan, the work that you've been doing with the NCF, the same folk thing, etc. And indeed, the NCF, in this time that we've had lockdown and shut down and festivals closing, etc. I think what you've been able to do and what you've done with the NCF is an example of how brilliant things can come forth in this time. This is a time. If we had regular crop over, we wouldn't have that normally. You know, we really wouldn't.
Correct. That project itself wasn't with the NCF, but other projects I did with the NCF are equally as important because we did the 2x tables, the multiplication tables with top music, and we got top band and videos that coming out on that too. ABC song, number song, so early childhood education, but using Bajan rhythms and Bajan references, right? So that was coming out too. That was a great project. It's instigated by Ms. Carol Roberts Reefer, the CEO, as another fantastic project. So that's the stuff we're working on. So StefanWalker.com, you can come give me a holler. I'm going to stop there. And thanks again so much.
Okay, Stefan, thank you. And of course, as soon as you're available again, because we have lots more to speak about, just let me know as soon as you're available. And I'm sure Ronnie will book it. Ronnie don't have a problem booking it. Once again, my brother, thank you for coming. I appreciate everything
you do. Good work, guys. Keep on the good work. It's important.
You too.
All right. Mr. Ronnie Clark, this is your boy Sluggy Dan. Just have to tell the people of Barbados, come out and check me out on Wednesday night at Bar Cutters, that's in Beckles Road. All proceeds goes to businesses in need. And thanks to farm workers for donating the tablet and the fire stick. Come out and win the tablet or fire stick and cash. Thanks to Green Gazette for donating some cash as well. See you on Wednesday at Bar Cutters, Beckles Road, 7 p.m. Mr. Ronnie Clark, it's been wonderful and I appreciate you, my brother. Please get home safe.
Thank you, Sluggy. Thank you, Dr. Stefan Walcott. So you have a Liverpool fan, a Manchester United fan, and an Arsenal fan on air at the same time, and there wasn't a fight. I think we created history tonight. All right, 1688 Orchestra featuring Jabari Brown and Marlon Legault. Hallelujah. And we say special thanks to all of you for tuning in.